This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by PRMIseattle.com, primary residential mortgage. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Pierce County?
Cuomo is asking the question whether or not Pierce County businesses should require proof of vaccination the same way that King County businesses, restaurants, indoor recreation, those kinds of places are being compelled to do. The reason why they're asking that question, we talked about this yesterday, was in Pierce County, they created, the public health department created a system called Bravo, and it stands for something, businesses requiring access to vaccine verification on site, something nonsensical like that. They're not taking a position to force businesses to require the vaccines or the vaccine passports. They're simply saying we're going to back the businesses that are. The question then becomes, will other businesses do it? As of yesterday, there have only been 5 businesses that joined this Bravo program, but obviously there are going to be more that will follow through. Michael Gruber is the owner of Ale House, and he spoke to Cuomo TV, and he says their vaccine rule has gone well so far because no one's pushed back against the vaccine mandate there.
For the most part, they've been really congenial and nice about it. You know, occasionally we'll get a walkout. Someone won't have it or doesn't want to show it, but there's been no negativity about it.
Now, folks who don't quite understand how this vaccine doesn't work as it relates to COVID, now that Omicron is very clearly the dominant strain, and it's been the dominant strain for several weeks now, the vaccine does not stop people from getting COVID. It'll stop people from having severe reactions when they do get sick with COVID, and they will get sick with COVID. Dr. Marty McCary will join us at 5:30 to discuss this. The people who don't understand how the vaccine works, like Phil Cowan, who's the executive director at Grand Cinema in Tacoma or in Pierce County, he thinks that the vaccine passport should go countywide.
I would encourage more places to do it. I mean, I know Pierce County is probably not going to be mandating it, so it doesn't really matter to hope or wish for something like that.
And yet it didn't stop you from pushing it, did it? Because you want to signal your virtue. You're a virtuous guy. You're someone who wants everyone to know that you require vaccine passports for folks who come to a movie theater sitting there with a mask on the entire time, pretending that it is necessary. Okay, fine. There are obvious businesses that want to do this. Number one, because they believe it makes them safer. It doesn't. But number two, they're doing it because, hey, maybe this is a way to differentiate themselves from other businesses. Obviously, the Grand Cinema is a smaller theater. It's an independently owned theater. They're competing with AMC and Regal and all the other ones. And this is their way of attracting a certain kind of clientele. And maybe this gives them a little bit of a leg up on the competition because there are some people who share their misinformation and ignorance on how this vaccine operates within the Omicron environment. The Symphony of Tacoma, Karina Barn, she thinks that the vaccine mandate would be so much better for everyone.
It would certainly make things less confusing. And knowing if I'm going to go out, this is what I need, that would actually be very helpful because right now it's a bit of a free-for-all.
But it's not a free-for-all. What it is right now is the exact way it was before. It's only difficult for businesses that are choosing to operate with a vaccine passport. Every other business that's not, nothing has changed between now and last year and the year before then and the years before COVID. The only places that are having maybe a little bit of a struggle, at least as it applies to people who show up and they're told they need to show a vaccine passport that they weren't expecting, that's the businesses that are making a choice to do this. The same way that if the restaurants out there that are doing this, like Crudo and Cotto in Tacoma, we'll hear from their owner in a second, if they just decided, you know what, starting tomorrow, we're going to just open at 7 p.m. and someone shows up at 6 p.m., it's going to be more difficult for them to deal with the fact that, hey, I didn't expect this as a loyal customer. No one told me. The difference is that they might, using the argument that Karina just gave, they're arguing that everybody else should open at 7 p.m. instead of being open before then, because it would be so much easier, be less of a hassle. It's a free-for-all right now. People are just opening their businesses at all times of the day. It's a horrible argument. Catherine Philbrook is the owner of Crudo and Cotto, also Basilico Ristorante in Olympia. She says, I would be so much happier if this country just made it all mandated.
It would be great, and I would feel more comfortable if it were the case for all restaurants.
Well, guess what? My interest is not your comfort. My interest is my comfort, the comfort of friends and family, and the comfort of communities. And if you're not comfortable in the circumstance that you find yourself, you can close your restaurant if you'd like, or you can implement the vaccine mandate. What would you care if another business chooses not to operate in the same way that you do? What would you care? Why would that make you feel better? Why would you be happier? Why would you be more comfortable? Worry about your own business. Stop telling me that you are a hero because of your position on a vaccine mandate. You're not a hero. None of these people are heroes. They're just doing what they believe is the right thing. Some of them, I think, are doing it, not necessarily these folks, but some people who do this, I do think they do it for the kudos, to be seen as evolved. It's a narcissism thing. But I believe the vast majority of the people who are instituting whatever policy they come up with, they think they're doing the right thing. Okay, well, guess what? Not everyone believes what you believe, and that's okay too. And the customers at the end of the day can choose whether or not they're going to go to a restaurant like Crudo and Cotto in Tacoma that requires you to show a vaccine passport, or they'll go across the street to another restaurant that doesn't. And if that's a better move for your business, that it's not going to hurt, in fact, maybe it'll attract, okay, good for you. I want you to succeed. I would just choose not to go there. Now, in fairness, I'm never going to Crudo and Cotto. I don't find myself in Tacoma all that often. But I'm choosing right now, as someone who lives in King County and has no choice, I am choosing not to go to the restaurants right now. Restaurants in my area, restaurants across the city. I'm making that choice because I don't believe that the vaccine mandate is the right thing. And it's definitely not based in science. 100%. It is not based in science. That is a personal position that I am taking as a consumer. Will I hold that forever? At some point, let's say King County, for example, never gets rid of the vaccine mandate. Okay, reasonably, I'm not going to be able to comply with that forever. I will have to give in. But I'm not at that point of feeling like I have to give in yet. I mean, let's be clear. Even in Pierce County, Dr. Anthony Chen, who yesterday we read something from the Tacoma News Tribune that indicated he still believes that washing hands prevents COVID. It doesn't. COVID is airborne. But even he's acknowledging now's not the right time for us to do it here.
The businesses that we've been working with, and the chamber, the Economic Development Board, and the Hospitality Association all felt that working on a voluntary program was going to be more effective for us here. Sure. In Pierce County.
No harm, no foul then, right? No harm, no foul. If it's voluntary, it was voluntary before. You could have voluntarily decided a decade ago, we're only going to allow people who show us proof that they got the flu vaccine, the flu shot, or proof that they're vaccinated against mumps and measles. They could have done that at any point. I don't think there was any law in the book that prevented that. So nothing has changed as far as the law is concerned in policy, and that's up to the businesses. I would just urge companies to do what's best for themselves, and if they believe that this is best for them, okay, I have no ill will towards you. I just won't be your customer at this point. Now, things could change, and my mind can change, I suppose. As of right now, I'm standing firm. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, I'll send you a link to my new story. You're not going to want to miss the video. It's so outrageous of a homeless prolific offender trying to steal a 70-inch widescreen HD television from the Target in downtown Seattle. It's all caught on video. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'm on Jesse Waters Primetime today. If you don't get a chance to see it, that's okay. You can check out the video at youtube.com/JasonRants, youtube.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the road?
It looks like we're headed to a potential initiative fight in the state of Washington, courtesy of the rideshare companies like Lyft and Uber. Turns out that they just created a new political action committee, so a PAC, and they've put in about $2 million into their war chest. Usually, when things like this happen, it's because they're going to push for an initiative, and it makes sense that they might want to do that because of legislation that is being pushed by Washington State Democrats. And for the longest time, you've had folks just flatly want Uber and Lyft and all of these car share companies to fail because they were getting in the way of the taxi cab union, unions that would give lots of money to Democrats. These are folks who believe that they know, these Democrats know how to run a disruptive business better than the people who created those businesses. And so the legislation would force these companies that when they get into contracts with these employees, with the drivers that pick you up, those drivers are basically independent contractors. So they're not treated the same way with the same benefits as if they were full time. They're not given certain guarantees. Now, certain cities like Seattle, for example, have changed the laws around so that it mandates certain hours and it mandates certain kinds of benefits. But now they would take this statewide, which would force Uber and Lyft and the others to provide these drivers with paid sick family and medical leave. You would have to pay for their insurance coverage, and you would have to create a fund for drivers, quote, in resolving disputes related to deactivations. But on top of that, it also codifies requirements like coming up with a zero tolerance policy for drug and alcohol use. It has non-discrimination policies in place, which already exist. But it would also provide a prohibition on drivers with certain moving violations or criminal convictions. So they're now saying you also have to hire the people that we want you to hire, even if you're not comfortable hiring them based on certain moving violations that they've gotten, which seems to be in the purview, I think, of Lyft and Uber, or if they have certain criminal convictions. Because remember, we're supposed to pretend that all applicants are exactly the same, and being someone who previously committed a crime that landed you in prison should not follow you for the rest of your life. Now, it doesn't include a minimum wage for the drivers, like what's happening in Seattle, where basically they are guaranteed a $16.39 minimum wage. That was passed back in 2020. On top of that, you get hit as a consumer with these different taxes. And unfortunately, that has made it incredibly expensive to take an Uber or to take a Lyft in the city of Seattle. And then, of course, if you consider the additional taxes you get hit with, if, say, you're going to the airport, it's prohibitively expensive. It's absolutely ludicrous. And I'm just pulling up the app right now at this point to go from where I currently am at the office in Eastlake to get to Alaska Airlines at SeaTac. It would cost me, if I took just the Uber X, $54.99. And if I needed one of the bigger trucks or vans, because let's say I'm leaving with people, it would be $62.92. That is ludicrous. We all know it's ludicrous. And it's more expensive than it was in the past because of all these different changes to their models, their business models. They priced originally for two reasons. They based their price on two reasons. Number one, it was, especially at the beginning, it was new and they wanted people to actually use their service. But then number two, they keep costs low so that they can compete with the taxi industry, which was more expensive than what they're offering. And so Democrats are basically trying to push that up, how much they actually end up charging us, so that it's no longer hurting the taxis. But when was the last time you took a taxi? The taxi industry, for the most part, at least here, is completely dead. It's still existing in New York, but even there, it's not what it once was. And the reason why they failed, the reason why Uber and Lyft was able to do what it is they did, was because they took advantage of the fact that the taxi industry completely refused to evolve. You still had to call a taxi and then wait 20, 30 minutes, maybe even more than that, for them to come pick you up. And once you got in there, you weren't able to use a credit card. And then they passed a law saying you have to use a credit card. And then they would give you a hard time, including just kicking you out of their taxi if you wanted to pay with a credit card, because that allowed them to, that basically made it so that they couldn't take more off the top than they otherwise would if you go through a credit card company. And then, of course, you got to pay some of the fees with the credit cards. They just refused to evolve. And so, bam, you had this disruptive technology coming from Uber and then Lyft. And again, depending on where you live, there might be another option. And then you got the car share programs like Gig Car, I think, or Car, whatever Gig is, where you basically just via your app, you can reserve a car that's parked anywhere on the street. If it's available, you take it and you pay by the minute as you're driving to your destination. But they made it almost impossible for those companies to exist as well. That's why there's only one left, I think, in Seattle. There used to be at least two or three. So instead of actually encouraging their allies in the labor movement and the taxi cab unions to change their ways, they've decided just to destroy these companies and make them as prohibitively expensive as cabs had become. But on top of that, now they're on this kick of, well, these are people from marginalized communities driving. And so you need to treat them better. We're going to mandate that you give them X, Y, and Z. Perks that's well within the purview of Lyft or Uber or whomever to offer if they so choose. And there's a lot of arguments as to why maybe Uber might want to offer a certain perk that Lyft doesn't offer and vice versa, because those two are now in steep competition. And so there's obviously a business argument to be made that, hey, you know what? We're going to offer this. We'll recruit the best drivers and we will defeat our competition, which would then force the competition to say, okay, well, you know, we see what that company's doing. I guess we're going to have to match that. In fact, we're not only going to match it, we're going to go one step higher. But because they're not doing that right now, or at least not at the pace that Democrats want them to do it, they're just going to get involved. But the problem is they're getting involved from a position of not truly understanding what the business model is, the back end stuff. They just know what they see. And a lot of these people who live in Seattle or spend most of their time in Seattle, they don't care that it's so expensive that someone who, say, lives in Sammamish wanting to drive to the airport would say, yeah, I'm not paying that. They don't care if you live in Sultan and you're trying to get over into Everett or Monroe into Everett, whatever it is. They don't care that you're going to see higher prices because they don't care about you. They just think that the people who take Ubers and Lyft, well, they're rich anyway, and they're saving all this money for not owning a car, having to pay for parking downtown. And the people, these business people anyway, they have the money, they're privileged. And that's the mindset that they go into. So I'm glad that Lyft and Uber are starting this fund, this PAC, to push back against these laws. I'm glad that they're doing it. And I don't even say that as someone who's like Uber. I can't stand Uber anymore. They're an annoyingly woke company, and their product has severely deteriorated. Lyft is so much better, in my view. Sometimes you get the same drivers on both platforms, but as a company, I find Lyft to be better than Uber. And that was not always the case. I used to endorse Uber. Uber used to be really, really good, but they've had some change in leadership. And then all of a sudden, they got stupidly woke and annoying. And so part of me doesn't really care that they're suffering a little bit. But you know what? I shouldn't take that position, because I'm going to take a values position, a principled position on how the business should be run. And they should be left to their own devices, so long as they're not breaking any laws on discrimination or safety issues. If you want to go ahead and monitor safety, okay, go for it. They do a pretty good job, and there's already laws on the books that cover it. This is about destroying their business model. And Democrats should have no right to do that. So I'm going to stick with the rideshare companies in this fight. I hope you do too. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 adjacent on a weekday afternoon. So that means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services, online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in, the communities you care about most. And we start in Kirkland. Even though the name of the store mentions the city we don't like to talk about. But we're starting in Kirkland because there's a business owner there that is being forced to go cashless, meaning they're no longer accepting any cash. You can only pay with a credit card, maybe a check, but stop it with the checks. Get a debit card, man. And they made this decision, they tell Como TV, after being targeted this week, in fact, Tuesday night, by an armed robber. The robber got away. Police are looking for him. But one of the business owners of the Seattle Barkery, again, this is based in Kirkland, so I'm not violating my rules of the Big Local. One of the owners, Ben Ford, is stepping up and saying, okay, enough. We have to change things, and the crime that y'all think is just happening in the city we don't talk about here, no, it's hitting us here in Kirkland too, a place where you never thought someone would show up. Pull a gun demanding money from the employee.
A man came in, brandished a firearm, and told her to empty the till.
And unfortunately, Ben has noticed that this is a trend that's happening all across the region.
It's hitting everywhere. I've heard this story 1,000 times, and until it hits you, you don't really quite understand it.
I've made that point a number of times on the show, but also doing some Fox News hits just recently. In fact, I think we talked a little bit about it with Stuart Varney on Tuesday morning on Fox Business, that until people experience the crime, they don't really get a good enough understanding of how bad it is. And I don't mean that in the sense of you personally having to go through an assault, or God forbid something worse, or even something not as bad but still a crime, like someone breaking into your car. You don't have to personally experience that to know what it feels like to live in an area that's under siege of crime. You just have to have that feeling. You can know someone who is experiencing this. You can have a neighbor whose home is broken into, or your barber shop having their front window tagged or destroyed, or whatever it happens to be. That direct connection, that personal connection to the crime that's going on, is enough to really open your eyes to see things the way that they are happening where you get out of your bubble. It's really easy for anybody, regardless of the issue, regardless of the city they live in, regardless of their politics. It is really easy to start to get sort of encumbered by your own bubble, whatever that looks like. You're in your own element. You're kind of closing off everything else that's going on around you, not paying that close attention. You're focused. And it's okay to be focused on family, on work, whatever it happens to be. But a lot of those people refuse to really understand what's going on, like accept what's going on. And for those people, not the bad faith activists who ignore and pretend that what's happening isn't happening. They know. But for the folks who are living in that bubble, to have it burst in this way is the only true way that you're going to see any sort of meaningful change in a community. You have to hit that mass of people understanding and experiencing what's going on if you truly want change. And of course, when this happens to you and you're seeing it happening to others, the first part of all of this isn't just going through the acceptance, but right after that, it's like, okay, well, now what? What are we supposed to do? I don't know.
You call the police, they see this every day. They see it ramping up. They don't really know what to tell you. You know, it's, I feel like their hands are tied behind their back. So I don't really know who to call, you know?
He doesn't know who to call. But then, of course, like so many other people, whether it's in Kirkland or on Mercer Island, whether it's in Enumclaw and Yelm or Steilacoom and Ferndale, wherever it is you live, you first go through that. Like, okay, I thought we should just call 911, but I guess they're not going to be able to do anything. I don't know what to do next. So then you do some research. And it was like, oh, okay, the city that I live in has a program that's supposedly going to go after all of these criminals. They've got new policies in place. And then you start paying attention to those policies and you realize, oh, nothing is actually happening. Nothing is happening. And then you start to make demands.
I know there's a lot of people putting a lot of time and money behind it to try to figure out how to deal with this, but something's got to be done. This is just getting worse and worse, and business owners are getting more and more frustrated.
They're getting more and more frustrated, which any business owner would feel if they had to go through this. I mean, and Suits was talking about this earlier this morning, like who's going and bringing a gun, pulling in a gun on an employee at the Barkery? The Barkery as in they make baked goods for dogs, for animals. So this is a level of desperation, and I think it's probably driven, I don't have any proof obviously in this case, but it's probably driven by drug addiction, which no one takes seriously in the state. In fact, we do the opposite. Oh, we're going to go ahead and legalize shrooms. And let's just lean into that. It's absolutely absurd. And nothing's going to get better until, frankly, more people get fed up like Ben and start to say something. And kudos to him for speaking up. Meanwhile, we had three additional fires last night or overnight in Tacoma, around Tacoma. A shopping cart, a car, a carport, all set on fire. And now we've got about 15, 16 arsons, suspected arsons, since Tuesday. Officer Wendy Haddo from Tacoma PD says this happened around 12:30 this morning, early this morning.
A vehicle on fire, and it caught the carport on fire. And that's the 1,000 block of South Mildred Street.
So no one was hurt in any of the fires. There is now a witness coming forward saying he saw some of this. He's a homeowner by the name of Jack. He lives right next door to one of the dozens of structures, I should say, that ended up getting damaged by all these fires that have been put up. And like I said, these are suspected arsons. And to be just feet away from one of the targeted homes, I can't imagine that you're feeling okay right now.
Front row seat. I say I woke up about 1:15 or so and then looked out my side window. You could feel the heat through that window. That's how hot it was.
And just based on where this is all happening and how it's happening, he suspects that this was all planned.
It's because there was nobody there. And I assume that somebody probably just walks around these neighborhoods at night.
That's terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying. And we should not expect something like that in our neighborhoods. If only the Tacoma Police Department had more resources to put into this. Because remember, as they, and they're going to catch this guy, it's probably a guy, they're going to catch this person. The Tacoma PD officers, they are amazing. They do great work. But remember that they are stretched very, very thin. Very thin. And the fact that they are now being hyper-focused on this, solving this crime or this series of crimes, means that all the other work that they need to do gets pushed aside. Or gets delayed, gets bogged down. And that's a reality of having a police department that is understaffed, under-resourced, and not really appreciated. But we appreciate them. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Thursday afternoon. There is kind of a sad story with a moderately happy ending. I guess it depends on your perspective, but it comes to us from the New York Times, and it's actually based out of a mistake that was made in Michigan over at one of their universities, Central Michigan University to be exact. They accidentally sent out an email as they were testing out some new software. They sent out this email to 58 high school seniors. And in this email, they said, "You just got a full ride to our school. Not only are we going to pay for your tuition, your room, and your board, but in fact, we're going to give you $5,000 to study abroad. And you're joining the school's honors program. Congratulations." The problem is those 58 high schoolers probably got it and said, "Wait, this can't be right. I'm an idiot." And as they, you know, I'm being a little bit facetious. Well, maybe. I don't know if they're idiots, but I'll assume they didn't say that. But they might have looked at this and say, "Huh? I wasn't expecting this. I mean, I'm not a dum-dum, but I'm definitely not a 4.0 student and didn't ace my SATs. I don't have a lot of extracurriculars, and I don't belong to a certain community that gets extra points when they look at admissions." Turns out they should not have gotten those emails because of the tech error. As they were testing out this new software, they accidentally sent these 58 high school seniors the letter claiming that they got a full ride. So 3 days go by, 3 days, in which these students thought they got this scholarship and got this sort of award, as it were. 3 days go by, and then they get another email, a statement coming from the school saying, "My bad, we made this mistake. However, we are going to still honor what it is that we said." They won't still get added to the honors program. I don't think they get the $5,000 award to study abroad. However, they did say that they will pay for the 4 years full tuition for the students who had been mistakenly told that they got the full rides. The university said it would be reaching out to the students with the amended offer. And in the statement, they say, "Blah, blah, 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 blah. We deeply regret the disappointment, blah, 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 blah." And they blamed the test message error on the student portal technology. Okay. So they did, I suppose, the right thing in acknowledging their mistake and trying to make it better. But the question becomes beyond some of the particulars, because in the New York Times are saying, we don't know whether or not they're just getting the full scholarship, as in the full annual scholarship, but whether or not they get the room and board, we don't know. They're still trying to figure out all that. And they say as of last night, it was unclear how much of what they originally offered they would get. But my reading into this is it's just going to be the tuition, but it could change. So I look at this and I say, I'm glad you guys tried to do something to acknowledge you caused some, at least, frustration. But is it right to give the full scholarship to people who truly didn't deserve it and only got an email as a result of a mistake? Is that fair? And I say that in the sense of, you know, the thousands of dollars, tens of thousands that you would end up spending. I mean, 58 students, just if we're just looking at the undergraduate tuition, that's $12,750 a year. So that's a lot of money. Are you taking that away in the long run from people who otherwise would have received it? Or are you just taking a hit financially? So that's number one. Because it feels like to me that if you're just taking the hit financially and this is a one-time thing, you're lessening some of my concerns, right? Because I don't want that money that otherwise would have gone to someone who was qualified to get it, who did really, really well in high school, really committed themselves academically, hoping that they would get a scholarship like this. I don't want them to be left out as a result of the mistake. So that's number one. But number two, my concern is with the student who says yes. I feel like a student could justify saying yes under these circumstances. They say to themselves, look, and this is like an honest internal conversation that they have to have. Look, I don't deserve this, and I know I don't deserve this. I did not do everything I could when I was in high school to get the grades that would put me in a position to get this offer. Or I tried my best, but I still didn't do the way that I had hoped to do, and I'm not deserving of this. However, I'm going to take advantage of this, and I'm going to use this as a motivator because I want to prove to this school that they didn't just make a mistake in which they lost $12,750 on me trying to make up for their mistake because I felt bad about it. I'm going to use this to motivate my work. I'm going to do a much better job. I'm going to study a little bit harder. I'm going to really commit myself in ways that I need to. I'm going to get extra help if I need that as well. In fact, I'll hire a tutor with some of the money that I otherwise would have paid to this school, because I don't want just a free ride that's undeserved. Now, I can't imagine how many kids, how many high schoolers would ever have that kind of conversation, like that internal dialogue. I don't know. They certainly exist. I just don't know what that number is. But the other kids who are just saying this, yeah, they screwed up and I'm going to take advantage. Boy, does that send the wrong message. Boy, does that send the wrong message. And those are the ones I'm worried about. And that's why I don't necessarily like this idea that Central Michigan University is just going to go ahead and give out a whole bunch of free money to people who didn't deserve it. In fact, I think it sends the wrong message to these kids of, yeah, don't worry. Sometimes you're just going to catch a break despite not working hard. And you're going to get something you didn't deserve. So, you know, just embrace it. The lesson should be, you know what? We caught an error. It's an error. Life sometimes throws you these kinds of curveballs that you're going to have to deal with emotionally. And I get it. It sucks. But no, we're not going to give you a full ride because, look, honestly, you didn't earn it. We still want you to come to our college. In fact, you got in. We're just not going to give you all this freebies, all the freebies. And we hope that you work really, really hard and take advantage of the opportunities you have. And then afterwards, make a life where you're committed to supporting your community, supporting your friends and family, and thrive in that way. But I'm sorry, we're not going to give you the money. That would be the proper way to respond. I get why they don't respond that way. It's just bad optics. I get it. Believe me, I understand. But I would argue that that would be putting these kids in a better position in the long term. Instead of just saying, oh yeah, okay, here it is. How many times have you gotten something that you didn't deserve only to have it taken away from you? An email that comes to you saying, oh, we're going to put you on this project. I know you've been working really hard. And then 10 minutes later, actually, oh, I'm so sorry. I meant to send that to the other Jason. Jason Krantz. That's who we meant to send. The lawyer. I'm kidding. He's a lawyer. There's some guy who's a lawyer named Jason Krantz. That's who we meant to send it. Sorry, sorry, sorry. They don't say, oh, okay, well, it was a mistake, but we're going to keep giving it to you, even though you're clearly not qualified to head that project. I don't like the message it sends, even though, again, optically, I understand why they did it. And as I say, I do think that there are some students who this could be used to motivate them when they get to college, if they so choose to exploit this mistake. I'm curious what you guys think. Send me a text. I'm truly wondering about that. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. What would you do? What would your kids do if they were in a position like that? 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.